Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Recording at our studio in East County, today we'll be opening with some breaking news out of Santee on the latest effort to halt the Finita Ranch housing development. And then from La Mesa, we'll tell you about the city's historic creation of a Citizens Police Oversight Board and how La Mesa residents can apply. Today we'll also have two newsmaker interviews. The first is with Letitia Dickerson. She's a candidate in El Cajon City Council District 2. She's a formerly homeless woman with a history of activism to help the homeless. She calls District 2 the Forgotten District and says she wants to make it unforgettable. We'll also be speaking with Joel Scalziti, a director and former president of the Helix Water District Board, who's running for re-election. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. And we also want to let everybody know that on election night Tuesday, we will be doing a special live broadcast of the East County Magazine Radio Show, talking about the outcomes in our East County races from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. And you can tune in on KNSJ. You can also watch us live stream it on Facebook at Facebook/East County Magazine. This is Miriam Raftery with a report from Santee, where a citizens group reports they have collected enough signatures to put a referendum on a future ballot that would overturn the Santee City Council's approval of Finita Ranch. Supporters of the massive housing project by HomeFed say it's needed to meet housing needs. The project, approved by a slim 3-2 margin by the City Council, would include around 3,000 homes, retail and office space, a school, a farm, and a fire station, as well as some open space. But opponents contend the project poses a serious fire hazard, being built in the path of the Cedar Fire, after a secondary evacuation route was removed from the plans, and also contend that it threatens sensitive species. Van Collinsworth with Preserve Wild Santee, who led the signature drive effort, made the announcement on Thursday.
Our goal was to get 3,584 valid signatures. And, you know, it was looking a little grim early. Our production wasn't too good, and we were getting blocked and harassed and chased around the neighborhoods. My phone got thrown even. It was pretty amazing. But, you know, we all stepped it up when we had to. And, you know, the pace increased. The word got around the city of, you know, what was going on and what needed to happen. And really, the residents of Santee stepped up.
Yeah,
that's
who
did it.
Yeah.
So we've got over 6,168 initial counts. So, it's an awesome job, and a testament to all of you organizing together and working together. And one of the unique or maybe interesting things about this time is, you know, there are people here that are all across the political spectrum, left, right. You know, it doesn't matter who your national candidate is or what your party label is. We have people working together for this goal, and really is a testament of what people can do when they consider what the public interest is and throw away the labels and the name calling. And, you know, when we step up together, we can accomplish a lot, and we did. So I'm proud of everybody.
That's right. Awesome.
By a 3-2 vote, La Mesa City Council recently approved a Community Police Oversight Board. The new board will provide recommendations to the Chief of Police, the Mayor, the City Council, and the City Manager on police procedures and policies and matters of public safety. The board is also empowered to retain an independent police auditor and direct investigation of serious incidents involving police, such as shootings or major misconduct complaints. Vice Mayor Akilah Weber made the motion to approve the Police Oversight Board. Mayor Mark Arapostathis amended the motion and added $50,000 in funding. Councilman Colin Parent joined with them to pass the measure. Councilmembers Bill Baber and Christina Licio, both attorneys, sought to delay the action by a month to avoid potential litigation after a lawyer for the La Mesa Police Officers Association sent letters to the city requesting a meet-and-confer process to let police officers' unions suggest changes. The union did not object to the formation of the board itself, but argued that the ordinance would have a significant and adverse effect on wages and hours and working conditions. But the city attorney disagreed, since the board's actions will be advisory only. Councilman Baber received donations and endorsements from the Police Officers Association in his last election. The union also endorsed both Alicio and Parent in November's election, but promptly withdrew their endorsement of Parent the day after he voted for the oversight board. Calls to create a police oversight board began several years ago after a grand jury recommendation and escalated following an incident at Helix High School in 2018 when a video went viral showing a La Mesa Police School resource officer knocking a handcuffed black female student to the ground. Then, in late May, another viral video of a white officer's controversial stop of a black man near a trolley station was widely perceived as racial profiling. That ignited public anger, which erupted into a riot on May 30th. Jack Hsu, who served on the city's Citizens Public Safety Oversight Task Force, called creation of the new formal oversight board a historic moment, adding, "This is a major step in helping the police department build trust with the community." Applications for the new La Mesa Citizens Police Oversight Board are now being accepted at City Hall through December 1st, and you can download an application on the City of La Mesa's website. The board will consist of 11 members, all residents of La Mesa, including a citizen from each of the four police beats, one from each of the following four communities: faith-based, business, a young adult under age 30, and a senior citizen aged 62 or older. Also representatives from Helix Charter High School and La Mesa Spring Valley School District, plus an advocate for people experiencing homelessness, substance abuse, mental health, or other social issues. Reporting for East County Magazine from La Mesa, this is Miriam Raftery. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine, and today my very special guest is Letitia Dickerson. She is one of six candidates running for El Cajon City Council in District 2. Letitia unfortunately missed our candidate forums because the city had a typo in her email address that they gave us. But luckily, she's reached out to us. And so today, she's going to be sharing her views on what she would like to do for the second district if elected. She says she's lived in El Cajon for over 22 years. She's gone from homeless to owning small businesses, including a smoothie shop that's wonderful. It was one of my favorites, and a gym. She now works in telecommunications. She has raised her children in the district and now has grandchildren here as well. She's also an ordained evangelical minister and a Republican who has helped organize SoCal Day of Hope. That's a program providing outreach and resources to people in need. She's volunteered with community nonprofits. There's a lot of them, but some of them include Rescue Mission, Salvation Army, San Diego Food Bank, San Diego Mentors, and Promises for Kids. She says she's seen very little growth in the 2nd District, despite new development elsewhere. And so she is calling the 2nd District the Forgotten District, and she pledges to make it unforgettable. So, Letitia, welcome so much. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And I apologize, everyone out there. I did miss the original forum, but I'm excited to be here now.
Oh, well, it's not your fault. And I'm sorry that we didn't know that it was a wrong email address. We certainly tried, you know, to reach everybody.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So can you start by telling our viewers and our listeners, for those listening on KNSJ Radio, what are your strongest qualifications for serving on the El Cajon City Council? And what motivated you to run for this office?
Well, I've been, I'm originally from Jersey, and I've probably lived in San Diego about 26 years. And like you said, about 22 of those years are in El Cajon City, and about 18 to 20 of those years are in the 2nd District. Obviously, it wasn't districting then. but if you had to find some type of correlation, it would be the second district. And I've had, like you said, I've had children and grandchildren in this district. I lived in this district. I've watched tremendous growth. I've seen tremendous turnarounds in El Cajon City, but not in this district. We seem to still be struggling with so many issues that probably plagued the world and then San Diego itself, but definitely in the second district. And me being a community organizer, I've helped people probably for half my life. I've been assisting and helping thousands, people who are not related to me, people who are not just family or close connections, but my desire is to help people and to see people grow and get better, which is what the SoCal Day of Hope does. We not only feed people, but we connect with resources so that people don't have to stay in that position. And that's my goal in the second district, to connect with the people who are already in it, who are already helping, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but connect and come together so that we can have communication and dialogue and boots on the ground to get this district up and equated with the rest of El Cajon.
Very good. So you are not only talking the talk, you're walking the walk.
Absolutely.
So to speak. You have indicated on your website that homelessness mm-hmm. is a top priority for you, and it's certainly mentioned as the biggest mm-hmm. issue in El Cajon by many voters. How specifically would you address the homelessness problem?
Well, I've been homeless, and not just for a week or so. I've been homeless twice. One was not my fault. One was probably my fault. but I also know that we need to deal with the root and not just the fruit. So thank God we do need to provide resources. People do need a hand up sometime and a handout sometime with mm-hmm. housing, but we just can't flood them into places. We need to get back to the day center. San Diego downtown has the Neil Good Day Center. We used to have a day center in El Cajon City, but not just a glorified adult daycare. Actually have a day center where there's advisors and people there that can connect people to resources, kind of find the root why you're homeless. Some people like being, I'm out there. Some people like being homeless. They like their position. They don't want to discuss it. Other people have mental illnesses. Some people have addictions. Some people like me was just one paycheck away. And when they missed that paycheck, unfortunately, they put them in a homeless situation.
Right, so lost a job or got evicted.
Exactly. Anything could have happened. Some spouses, people got sick, a lot of things. I understand that. I was married to a man in a wheelchair. He was quadriplegic. And when he got injured, that changed our whole lifestyle. Oh, so gosh, situations. And yeah, he's dead. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. And you were widowed and you went on to raise your kids essentially as a single mom.
He was actually my second husband. So I didn't have any children with him, but I did have children while I was married to him. So it was hard losing the income and all of that. So, but if we can connect and find out what the root of the issue is, then we won't just keep pulling the fruit off the tree. We deal with the root and then you can move people. So if we get them to day centers and we figure out what's going on, why are you homeless? Then we can deal with the root of it. And this requires, I'm a boots on the ground kind of person. Everything can't be done in a meeting room.
Okay.
Because you have to build one thing I know about the homeless is they don't trust everybody and you have to build rapport and relations with that.
That's very important. Moving on to another topic. El Cajon, like many cities, has been the target of protests recently mm-hmm. over racial justice and specifically policing concerns. How would you address the calls of the many people who want to improve racial justice, and some of them want to shift police budget priorities, versus the concerns of others who think El Cajon needs more funding spent to improve public safety and address crime?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a Black woman, obviously. So obviously I've experienced racial injustice and racism. And I in no way, shape or form believe we need to be defunding the police or removing. We need our police officers. We love our police officers. We need our protection. And no matter who we are, or what demographic, we all know 911. And when we call it, we want somebody to be on the other line. however, we do need to build dialogue. I'm a part of the Faith-Based Action Coalition. And I've also done CAST. I haven't done any more, but CAST, I don't know if you heard of them, Community Assistance Service Team. Yeah. And I used to be a part of the Lemon Grove Clergy. And all of these things, we would bring the police officers, the sheriff departments, and faith-based leaders and the community prosecutors come together at a table, and we would find out where the lack of communication was, where we missing it. So we need to open that dialogue. There's nothing, I'm a firm believer in the First Amendment and the right to assemble. So it's nothing wrong with peaceful protests. But we need to have where the ball drops is the definition of peaceful.
Right. Yeah. Burning buildings down probably doesn't. Right. Doesn't
so
that.
We need to have a common definition and peaceful. So I believe in anyone's right to assemble peacefully and voice their issues. And people need to feel like they're being heard. And one of the things I know with Black people, a lot of times they feel like they're not being heard. Mm-hmm. Yes. However, we need to have a healthy dialogue. I had an incident, but real quick, if I can give this example. Years ago, back in 2001, 2002, like early 2000s, my car was stolen. And I reported it. I got it back about 30 days later. And somebody didn't do the paperwork. So I'm riding down Broadway by the yogurt mill. Uh-huh. And about four or five police officers pull me over. There's cops behind me. And I don't know why the lights are going on. And there are police officers behind me. They get out the car. They're saying, get on your thing. They handcuffed. My ex-husband, and they handcuffed us. We're on the ground. And it's been about maybe 8 minutes. And at this point, I have no idea why I'm on the ground with handcuffs. About 2 minutes later, one of the officers says, she's the owner. Somebody didn't file the paperwork when I picked my car back up. So they still had it missing. It was just a lack of communication.
So they thought you were
driving. As soon as they found out, they apologized. They were so apologetic. They felt so bad. Yeah. It took about 30 minutes to handle the whole situation. Had I responded differently I didn't know what was going on. So in my perspective, it may have looked like they were racial profiling or pulling me over for no reason.
Yeah.
They I was the owner.
I had a similar circumstance some years ago, and I wonder if I'd been a person of color, if they might have not treated me the same way. But we had sold a minivan, and the place we donated it to failed to register the change of ownership. Fortunately, we had our copy of it, but apparently it got picked up attempting to smuggle drugs through the border, and we had the police show up at our doorstep all set to, I think ready to arrest us, but fortunately my husband had the paperwork and was able to show it. And they were very polite and courteous, but I just wonder if we'd been people of color, would they have stormed in and handcuffed us, and might it have been a different, treatment?
Yeah. But in their defense, we look like two people driving stolen car. They had the car reported as stolen.
Yeah.
So once we got the communication cleared up, we were all on the same page.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Although so did have the outfit
along with that.
Do you think that they need any changes in police training or maybe more PERT teams to handle situations like the Alfred Alongo incident a few years ago? The Black man who unfortunately was having a mental illness issue, and the police were called, and next thing you know, he was,
Unfortunate incident. And I don't know if that could have been handled any differently. And it's easy in hindsight or people for us off on the sidelines to say we would have done something differently. But,
He did pull, for those that aren't familiar, he did pull out a device that was turned out to be
a
gun, and it was at very close range. I guess the only question.
And the police officers want to go home to their families too. Yeah. he did pull out something. I don't know. We all have a fight or flight mode. So I don't know if they need I don't think retraining would be the operative word, but additional training. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to many police officers. They welcome the additional training. One of the things we do with the Faith-Based Action Coalition is they're talking about building an app so that you understand the one is for the police and one is for the community. So you understand the police also understand cultural and religious paradigms on how you enter a situation so that it doesn't become heightened. So if you enter, this is how this culture may think, or this is how they perceive you. So when you walk in, you need to understand this so that you're not itchy, with reactions. And also for the community and the residents, this is how you respond to police officers so that you don't create these situations. Because had we not conformed when we got pulled over, that could have been a different situation. Instead of taking an extra 8 minutes to figure out what was going on, it was an uncomfortable situation, but I'm alive to tell you about it.
Right, because you didn't try to fight
back. So we have to use wisdom on both sides. So that's where the communication comes in. And what you also used to do with cast is, and they may still do, I'm not a part of cast anymore, but we have what we call walk-in knocks, where the police, we, the leaders, would partner with police officers. And we would literally go through the community and knock on doors. Hi, this is Officer So-and-so. I'm Letitia Dickerson. We just want to know, is there anything in the neighborhood? Is there anything that we can clear? Is there anything we can do for you? Yeah, even down to the point of food and things like that. Just joining as a unit. We don't have to be in opposition with one another.
Yeah, very good points. Our state and our region have had a shortage of housing, especially affordable housing. Mm-hmm. What is your strategy for increasing housing, particularly affordable housing, in El Cajon?
Wow. We definitely need affordable housing in El Cajon City, in San Diego, period, but definitely we're in El Cajon City. We have to get people to reinvest. So the investors that have poured into El Cajon, or the businesses we're trying to get into El Cajon, or the people that have captivated, we need to figure out a way, first of all, to help the ones that are already here. The apartments, especially in the second district, is an extremely transient area because there are so many apartment complexes. Mm-hmm. So figure out how, where we're dropping the ball on upkeep and fixing the apartments and things like that. And also find out where we can get the investments in for the opportunity zones that was already implemented in 2018 for the tax write-offs. Figure out where we can build so that it's not such a small area of housing. There wouldn't be such a lack of housing in California. And of course, we're always limited in the city and what the state is doing.
Sure. The city has suffered a loss of sales tax revenues recently because of the pandemic and so many businesses being shut down or operating at reduced capacity. And now Parkway Plaza has been, I don't know if you know this, but they've been sold to a developer. And there's been some talk that the developer might want to build houses or offices or something other than retail. Do you think, it's a kind of a two-part question, but do you think that Parkway Plaza should remain a regional shopping mall or primarily a regional mall? And what other ideas do you have for attracting new businesses and or supporting the businesses already here that are struggling during the pandemic to both kind of grow that business community, you know, make sure we still have some retail, and help the businesses that maybe have struggled during the pandemic?
I think that kind of correlates with the last statement. So I appreciate that question. First of all, in no way, shape, or form do I think we should get rid of Parkway Plaza. No way, shape, or form. However, there's no reason why we can't do something like they've done with the Fashion Valley Mall, where we can build around it. There's a lot of open areas. There's a lot of spaces. Yeah. There's a lot of commercial things that can be redeveloped. There's plenty of ways to build residential around Parkway Plaza, which would bring more traffic to Parkway Plaza. Also, we need to figure out one of the things. I think probably at least 20% of El Cajon is Middle Eastern, and they found a way to capitalize that demographic, like you see down Main Street. So they've marketed the best part of that. Hey, 20% of El Cajon is Middle Eastern. So if you can market to them, then you'll be able to have a prosperous business in this area. We need to find the most positive attributes about El Cajon City and begin to market those.
Well, or maybe do like San Francisco has Chinatown.
Exactly.
A little Saigon district designated recently. In
different
City
things.
Heights.
And again, take advantage of those opportunity zones that would do like zero capital gains tax, and begin to build education and training for businesses. Hey, if you put businesses here in El Cajon, we'll kind of keep your education up, kind of like a little small business, El Cajon Small Business Administration, that would keep education and mentoring going up. So when businesses come, they feel like they're not by themselves. Figure out how to fund startups and things like that.
You mentioned something about the city kind of networking with the schools, the school district. I'm curious what you envision there, what kind of a relationship
you know what? I used to have I still have four grandkids. Two of them used to be in El Cajon. Mm-hmm. They're high school students now. And I have one granddaughter that's still in the district, and she's on the autistic spectrum. Now, obviously, we know that the school administration and the board is their own entity.
Yeah.
So we don't have jurisdiction over that. But I really believe there's almost like a I believe it's inadvertent, but there's almost like a kicking against the prick between the two entities. And I would love to be able to without them feeling like we're trying to tell them how to run it. I would love to be able to get an open door to see where we can help one another, because there's so much going on with the schools, to see how we can engage with the parents and see how they can kind of begin to get an active role again in their children's education. Also begin to see where open up areas so that the children aren't stuck. I know with my granddaughter, we've had some issues where she's too far advanced to be, she's on the autistic spectrum, so she's too far advanced to be in that classroom, but she's also not far advanced enough to be on her own. But there seems to be a drop in that part where we can get the resources necessary for them to give us additional aids for her in the district. There doesn't seem to be enough finances, because you know the schools are based on the taxes and all that, on the funding toward the schools. So I'd like to figure out a way where we can come together and come to the table and with a meeting of the minds with the school district.
Okay. If there is another round of CARES Act funding from the federal government, which is a very big if right now with Congress gridlocked over that, how would you prioritize who would get the funds locally in El Cajon?
Would it be? Definitely, we need to get back to our businesses. We need to get our businesses up and running. I believe we need to be open. We need to get them up and running. I believe we can do that safely and efficiently. Business owners want to, as a former business owner, we want to be prosperous. We want our business to succeed. So we're willing to do what we need to do to help them succeed. So I believe we can follow the mandates of whatever the state is exercising and still open up our business. So if we find businesses that are profitable and we find those businesses that were doing what they need to do, we need to fund those businesses and make sure they're able to stay open. Find those ones that may be struggling, but they have things in place. But the funding needs to go to them.
Okay. So as opposed to say renters or mortgage holders.
I think we need to go to renters as well. Those that need it, those who have legitimately lost jobs. There are people who have lost jobs. And my household's been blessed because I'm an essential worker. My daughter's a nurse. Her husband has his own business, but he's been affected. His business was shut down. He owns a small gym in Mira Mesa. Was affected by that. So we do have renters, some where they there were two incomes and both incomes were lost. So we don't want people evicted out of their homes. The landlords have to pay bills too. So we have to figure out where the landlords are struggling that haven't received rents from a lot of workers. So that's part of business. And then you have residents who legitimately don't have income. Some of them took a minute to even, the website was, it was so many people that it crashed. So they were not even able to get a check right away. So they're still playing catch up. So we have to find out where those resources, where it really was necessary.
Okay. Moving on to talk about the arts for a moment. Our region's Performing Arts Center was closed for over a decade before the city finally was able to do a big remodel. They invested in it, but they also brought in Live Nation, which made its own investment and was managing the theater. It still is. It became profitable actually ahead of schedule, and then COVID hit, forcing a shutdown that's indefinite at this point. My question for you is, whenever they're allowed to actually reopen again, would you back continued support of the Magnolia to, you know, if Live Nation needs any help to make sure that we don't lose this treasured resource for the community?
Absolutely. And I like Live Nation. They've done it across the world, not just across America. They've done it across the world. I believe we need to let them do what they need to do. A prosperous, and it's called the Magnolia, which is cute. I think that because that's the city flower and the logo, whatever. So I thought that was a great play on names. Yeah. And it kind of gets rid of the minuscule paradigm. because the East County Performing Arts kind of kept it minuscule, but Magnolia opens the door to whomever may want to come in. True. You know, it could kind of be like a sports arena. And as people come and acts come, that's more revenue for El Cajon City. That's more people coming to the city. That's building up the arts and the concept, how people see El Cajon City. So I say, let Live Nation do what they need to do.
Yeah. You have pledged to make the second district unforgettable. Other than what we've already talked about, do you have any other specific ideas for the district to make it unforgettable?
Yeah, I think we need to, the bottom line is, you know, I want to make sure, like I said, I've had children in the district, so I'm not going to forget about the children who are in the district. Mm-hmm. I've been homeless. I know how it feels. So I'm not going to forget about the homeless in the district. I've also been a business owner, so I know how it feels concerning the inundation of the surroundings and what it looks like and the cleanliness and the issues on the streets that can come from people being homeless or waking up in front of your building and all that. So I'm not going to forget about the businesses. So we can go down the list. I understand community organization. I know how to bring people and resources together. So I think I'm the one, I don't think, I know I'm the one that can connect this all together and make sure that we can fix the issues that we have and work together with the people who I feel like the mayor and the city council are doing what they need to do. It's just you don't have enough people to do it. There's not enough representation. So we need people that can focus. I appreciate the districting so that now we can get somebody in that will focus on this district and focus on the people in this district.
And I should mention, by the way, we should define what the second district includes roughly. It's sort of the central north portion of the city. Am I remembering right?
You know, if you want to talk cardinal directions, I think you've lost me, but I know I am so bad with maps and cardinal directions, right. But I know that it goes, you go all the way down from near second toward Greenfield, mm-hmm. around by near the Target and coming down. So if I can give landmarks.
And then to Main, I think down as far to as Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Chambers, like when you're going toward SDG&E and all that. So okay. Yeah, it spreads all the way down there. Yeah, but cardinal directions, I'm so low. I don't even know where I live at, and I'm off of Mollison.
That's all right. I'm going to let you have the last word here today, Letitia. What else would you like our viewers and our listeners and our readers on the website to know about you and your candidacy? If there's any issues we missed, any endorsements you want to mention, and also where can people find more information about your candidacy?
So my greatest endorsement is the one through Jesus Christ. So God sent me to do this. So I believe I'm called to do it. I'm ready to do it. I'm positioned to do it. Letitia Dickerson, you see my name, constantly, letitiadickerson.com. You can go to my website. It's connected to all of my social media. I have not blocked any of my social media. So it's all open. It's not private. I did that on purpose. Even if you disagree with me, you still be able to understand my platforms and my paradigms. Because I believe we can disagree without being disagreeable. So if you go to my website, letitiadickerson.com, you can connect to all of my Twitter, Instagram. You can see the information that I've done and the entities and organizations I'm connected with till this day. Mm-hmm. And the ones that I was connected with, you can see photos that were posted years ago so you see that this is not something that I just engaged in just to run, but I'm running because, for half my life, I've been fighting for others. And now I just want to fight for you.
Fantastic. And that is spelled for those that don't have the screen in front of them here. It is L-E-T-I-T-I-A, Letitia Dickerson, D-I-C-K-E-R-S-O-N. Letitia, I really want to thank you for taking time to join us today on East County Magazine's show. And the election is coming up in November, folks. If you don't already have your ballot, be sure to call the registrar, and because everyone should have been sent one by mail. There are super drop-off locations in El Cajon, libraries, lots of other places. You can even hand deliver it up to the registrar voters if you want, drive by.
Which is what I'm doing today.
Good for you. I'm getting ready to fill mine out too. So be sure to remember to vote. And Letitia, thanks so much for joining us and good luck with your candidacy.
Thanks so much for having me. Remember, vote for Letitia Dickerson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine, and the East County Magazine radio show will be airing this on KNSJ. And my very special guest today is Joel Scalziti, who is the president of the Helix Water Board. He's running for re-election in District 5. He's one of four candidates. District 5 includes, I understand, portions of El Cajon, Granite Hills, Bostonia, Lakeside. Is there more, Joel? Did I get it?
Yeah, that's okay. About accurate. And okay. Actually, I'm not president right now, but...
Oh, okay. I was going off your bio. Past president then.
Past president, yeah.
Thank you. He's been on the board for over 10 years. He owns several local businesses, including a water service company for freeway construction, a delicatessen in El Cajon, and Mary's Donut Shop, which has great donuts out in Lakeside. Yes. He's also a member of the San Diego County Water Authority Board and the Advanced Water Purification Board. He's served on several district committees, including the Audit Committee, Water Quality and Resources Committee, and a committee on parks. And he helped lead efforts to keep the Lake Jennings campground open, which was a great thing. So, Joel, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I'd like you, if you could, to start, since you're the incumbent, by telling us what you consider your most important accomplishments or achievements in your decade on the board.
It's more longevity. You know, you get on the board and there's people that have been on there a long time. They're not really ready to digest some of your ideas. So you've got to kind of play long, learn their style and try to, you know, see where you can input some of your ideas where they're going to be digested. And I think that's a mistake that some people have. They think they're going to come in here and change the world. And reality is this year, there's a lot of learning to do and respect to be earned, and then try to implement some of the ideas and things that you think that can be more efficient and better. And I think that's what I've prized myself on the last 10 years. You know, just not going in there and changing the world, but really getting in there, learn a system, figure out how to be effective. And, and I pride myself on being a good listener. And I think that's part of it. You know, when I was younger, getting into the workforce, I was a barber, and you had to be a good listener being a barber, you know, and people come in, they sit down and they say, I want, you know, short through here and I want this much on top. And you really got to listen to them because that's what they're looking for. They want something that you're going to give them and they want it their way. And the better listener you are, the more effective that you can be. You can understand people.
Yeah, there you go. Tell me about what your goals are if you're reelected, understanding that, of course, you're only one of five board members, although it sounds like there's at least a possibility one seat could change since there's a competitive race there. What do you foresee ahead for the next 4 years in the Helix Water District?
Well, I think progressing some of the things that we've already done, but making them more efficient. You know, I pride myself on the Lake Jennings and turning it around. They wanted to shut it down and doing some things differently. And they didn't give me any new budget to see if I can, you know, get it into the green. We had to do things without new money or more money. So we did just simple things like bigger fish instead of smaller fish, which the birds and the other fish didn't eat. So, and then the anglers would catch bigger fish and then there was a little buzz that went on. So we're just doing little things differently.
Yeah. Bringing in teepees and canoes. I remember the fun.
Yeah. Stuff. So we're doing things with really low payback and we can make a profit and kind of pay us back right away. And so now next year we're going to be, we're looking at right now some designs to put some money into the park kind of upgrade the sites and some sewer systems and electrical. And this is not going to be ratepayer money. It's assets that we sold, and we're going to take those assets and fix other assets. So it won't affect the rate or won't affect the people. But I think that's is what my goal is to see that through, where we're going to invest in this in the Lake Jennings, mm-hmm. that it'll be more stable for decades to come, not just a couple of years. But we've been in a positive now for, I would say, 4 years or something like that. I mean, it's really kind of a neat thing.
That's great. That is good. My next question is how the pandemic has impacted the district's budget, and do you foresee any changes ahead because of that that would impact the ratepayers or the employees, for that matter?
You know, obviously in the beginning it was an unknown, so people are staying home. Some people are, you know, we were kind of slowed down on the workforce, but I think people have really took on the change. And so we're doing a lot of Zoom meetings. I know our construction crews are doing Zoom meetings. So not necessarily that our crews have to go into the operation center to have a meeting, and now they're out of the job site and they're Zooming with the other construction crews on the other side. So, you know, just adapting to the change and taking it in, change isn't always popular, but sometimes when you embrace it, it is more efficient. And I think that's what our agency has done. I was against a lot of these Zoom meetings for our board meetings, but they're not so bad. It gives some of the other people to be more prepared and actually sit at their desk and have some of the information that they can't have right in the boardroom. So there's a lot of good things that came out with some of this stuff. And I think that as we embrace some of the change and not just fight against it, that it'll help us. But we do like to get back into the boardroom.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I have a question later on the Zoom era of Zoom, but we'll get to that one.
Yeah.
Water rates, of course, are always the top issue in water district races, I think, through the years. Can you tell us how successful you've been at trying to hold down rates, which is always what the voters usually want? And should the public, understanding that, of course, it's contingent on a lot of factors that, you know, such as the price coming into the water district and drought and everything else, and also, do you think that the public should be able to weigh in at hearings annually or whenever a rate change is proposed? I remember a few years ago, the board majority went to every 5 years, and there was some controversy over that. What are your feelings about that, and what do you foresee looking in your crystal ball for rates in the future? So I guess that's kind of a three-part question.
The record, that's a loaded rates, question there.
What's going to happen within the future?
Well,
and should it be every year?
You know, just to touch in on some of where I feel like the rates are, and I'm really sensitive about the rates. Obviously, you know, our rates continue to increase every year, and for sometimes there are droughts that, and then some are restrictions that the state puts on us and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But this year, you know, it was the pandemic. People are having troubles, and they're not being able to pay their water bill. They're not being able to pay some of their other bills. And it was a big worry. And I led the charge just saying, hey, you know, our water district is pretty stable, and we do a pretty good job at being stable, probably one of the most stablest in the county. But we set ourselves up for emergency times in certain things. And I said, hey, if there's ever an emergency, if we saved up for that rainy day that we had a bad day, it's this year. And so I think that we should not raise the rates this year. We should have substantial reserves, and we've set ourselves up, because if there was a year like this, and this is the year, I said, so I led the charge not to have any rate increase this year. It was the first one I've ever heard of, and I've tried to get information if there's one been in the past, but every year Helix traditionally likes to increase a little bit instead of having large spikes. But I said, you know, this year is the year that we're going to go without a rate increase, and let's see how we affect what the effects take on us. Let's see how we can keep to a budget with our operations, and see where we keep budget to our waters and, you know, water purchases and whatnot. And so since then, I've some of my colleagues agree with me. Actually, at the end, there was a unanimous vote, and we did not increase the water rates this year. I was really super proud of that. And our staff is really adapting to it. So I'm hoping that they're prepared for more of this in the future, because, you know, it just doesn't mean that we have to raise it every year just because. And
that's a good point.
And like I was saying in the beginning, it's you can't charge in here and say no rate increase and no this and that, but really learn the system. And now this is actually a good way to say, hey, can we stretch ourselves this year and not do a rate increase? And how's it going to affect us next year? Do we have to raise again a little bit? And can we not raise the next year? You know, I'd really like to see where we can stretch and how we can be a little bit more efficient. And I think this year has been an eye-opener to say we had no rate increase and let's see how it affects us.
Yeah, well, I'm sure all the people out there that are out of work or struggling with less income in their businesses, you know, appreciate that. Another water issue that I've heard come up from time to time in the district is, as far as I know, my understanding is that Helix is still assessing water based on water usage, you know, obviously encouraging people to conserve, while some other districts like Padre Dam, they also look at factors like family size and lot size. In other words, so that somebody with a big family or a large lot where you're trying to keep the trees alive and not create, you know, brush fire hazards isn't penalized if they're attempting to conserve, but there's only so far, you know, you can go with that. Do you think the current system should be retained, or do you support maybe taking a look at some of those other things?
You know, I do not like the tiered system as much as it makes sense for the staff. Mm-hmm. I have a large lot. And I have another dwelling on my property as well. Mm-hmm. So I have a higher water bill because, and they look at mine was, oh, here's a director and he uses this much water. But I have other family that lives on my lot with me. Mm-hmm. We share a water meter. So, and I have an acre. So I get hit pretty hard that Lincoln, like I'm a large water user. But the reality is that we're in the business to sell water. I mean, that's the water authority. I mean, the water district Helix. Creates revenue off this water sales. And if we don't sell enough water on these water sales, then we don't have enough in the budget to pay for, or the revenue to pay for some of the commitments that we had, such as retirement and
it's an ironic situation in that you want people to conserve because it's the right thing to do. And yet if people conserve too much, then there's not enough income coming in for the district. So how do you resolve that, to be fair?
And then they raise the rate. They get all mad because they're like, listen, I've done everything I can. I've conserved. Right. And now you're raising my rate. Well, I'm a believer in we should use water, as much water as we want to use, but we should not waste water. And I think that should be the new message that goes out is use as much water as you want, but just don't waste water. And I think if we live by that motto, we'll do a lot better. Mm-hmm. And if we can change.
What about the issue of large families or larger lots? Should everybody be charged, you know, the same rate, no matter how many people are in your family or how big your lot is? Or
I think that's coming in the future. Our system, and not only Helix, but the Southern California is moving to more of a fixed charge. And instead of more of a usage charge, mm-hmm. the usage charge is going to shrink and the fixed charge are coming. And it's just inevitable for the amount of infrastructure that we're putting in the ground and constantly rehabilitating and maintaining. And it's going to affect our fixed charges. So our fixed charges are going to be going up, and hopefully our usage is going to take a different type of tier. And that's all coming in the next couple of years.
We are seeing hotter, drier conditions across the West, what scientists would call climate change. Whatever we call it, we're certainly seeing the effects of it here locally. What more, Joel, can be done to assure that our region will continue to have a clean and stable supply of water going forward?
Well, I think that we've been working on that for years, and I'm glad you brought it up. Mm-hmm. We're working on our own local supply here with Padre Dam in the city of El Cajon mm-hmm. in the county of San Diego. And we're trying to create our own local East County supply with the Advanced Water Treatment Program. So I sit on that board as well.
Which is basically water recycling, right?
It's water recycling taken to a newer and next level.
I've seen them, you know, brewing the beer out of it and drinking it and to show how clean it is.
So that's been a long time coming, and the regulations took a long time to get, and they're still kind of learning, and they're kind of watching us because we've had our scientists and people out there working really hard at implementing some regulations as well. And so we're going to have the probably, I think, the first water water reservoir augmentation here in the county in next 2 or 3 years, and it's exciting. There's been a lot of work put into it to have our own local supply drought proof. Obviously, the city of San Diego is doing one on a much larger scale, but I think that it's so hard for an agency that size to get these big things done. So I think that we're going to be leading the way and getting our project up online first, which is really exciting. And it's been my passion. I've in the past I've ran for other offices for mayor of El Cajon. That was my passion then, is to make sure that the city of El Cajon was in this program, that was 100% in taking some of their wastewater and stripping it down there and taking it from going out into the ocean and actually recycling it. So I'm glad that they're on board. But this AWP has been my passion since I got on the board.
Very good. Thank you. And we've heard a bit about some other areas where there have been efforts to divert water from certain districts, shift them to other areas. Do you think the water that belongs to Helix Water District's customers should stay in this district if another county or a city were to seek to buy our water if we had a good year, lots of rain? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, we like to keep as much water as we can, especially if it's our water, local water. Helix Water District owns two reservoirs, which is Cuyamaca Lake up in Julian, and in Cuyamaca Mountains, and Lake Jennings. So we pride ourselves at buying water in the wintertime when there's excess amount of it, and we store it in the Lake Jennings, and then we can draw it down and use it during the summer when it's high demand and the peaks up. So we do we have those assets, and fortunately we do. A lot of other districts don't, so they have to kind of pass that cost on to their ratepayers, which is not always pleasant. But we have some reservoirs and some infrastructure that it's lucky we can kind of do those things for our ratepayers, and it saves them a lot of money.
Yeah, that's good. We talked a little bit about the era of Zoom now, where your district and some others are holding meetings virtually. Some of them are providing really easy access to the meetings and recordings online. Some others have been far less transparent. A few of them have been downright murky about it. I haven't really checked into the Helix one yet. But I wanted to ask you how accessible those live meetings and also the recordings of the Zoom meetings are. And I'm curious, once the COVID era is over and the restrictions on gatherings, do you think that when the district goes back to in-person meetings, that they should continue to live stream them so people can watch from home? And should they have videos? How long should videos be available on the website? And if so, for how long?
It's a great question. Like I was saying before, we're all kind of trying to adapt, but I think that's going to come. We're getting so much better at these Zoom things. There'll be kind of a standard pretty soon. And I hope that there's a standard that everybody can live up to that certain standard, and then it'll be a normal practice. So although I'm pretty anxious to get back into the boardroom and sit in front of my colleagues to conversate and network and talk to right in front of each other, we are going to be missing some of these things that maybe people can catch on their way home or at work when they're stuck at work. They can't go to the meetings, but they can turn it on right there. So I think that I'm hoping that there'll be a certain standard, and maybe we can do one or two meetings a month where we can still do Zoom so the public can access and easily do it, because it is getting a lot more convenient. And I'm just waiting for the certain standard that everybody kind of follows, so everybody will have the same kind of access.
Yeah, it also, another advantage of it is it makes it really easy to do the recordings. I mean, even in a standard meeting, it's just not that hard to do if everybody's got even a little tablet or something like that. It makes the recording very easy. You just hit record like I just did for this one, and then anybody can be watching it anywhere. If you put it on Facebook, it could be live. But also, just to put a taped version, I know local boards before this, all you had were audio recordings. Some of them you'd have to drive to their office to pick it up or pay to get a CD, which was a pain. Yeah. And with this, you simply ask, can I download the recording? And maybe there's a nice button right on the site and they keep them up there for a year or so. And it's just so easy. I mean, for me as media, but I think for the public too, a lot of people work, they can't make those board meetings. Even if they did, they may want to listen to it again and make sure they're, you know, quoting somebody correctly or remembering something correctly. So, you know, it'd be nice to see those retained for as long as they can.
Yeah. And like I said, hopefully there'll be a standard that everybody kind of follows the same thing and it'll be just a norm.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, Joel, we've kind of gone through all the specific questions that I had. I just wanted to ask if there's anything else that you would like the public to know about your candidacy or any endorsements you may have, and also where they can get more information about you.
Well, I first of all, just to start off, like, I'm just a regular person like my neighbors. I got elected to represent my neighbors and people in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I'm a really hardworking businessman here in our community. I do a lot with the community. I help a lot with the local schools and local law enforcement. I sit on the chamber board of the Chamber of Commerce here in Lakeside. I'm on that Chamber of Lakeside board of directors. Public service is my passion. I got into it just kind of being a pulse on the community. Like I said, I was a barber early on in my life, and it kind of taught me to like listen and hear what the people in the public are saying when they come in. But my goal is that I make a better place for my kids and then their kids. And that's kind of my passion. If I can put a little time into that and make sure that they're thought of not only just right now, but in years to come for them and their kids and their kids. And that's my passion. That's why I'm here. So like I said, I own a couple of small little businesses. We work really, really hard. But I enjoy my community and I really enjoy public service.
Very good. Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining us today and to remind all of our viewers and listeners that we will be posting this interview on eastcountymagazine.org and on YouTube and Facebook and just about everywhere else. And just to remember that if you haven't already voted, if you didn't get your vote by mail ballot, you know, request it. You can drop it off at libraries, lots of places, vote at the poll, or drop it off early. And they even have a drive up one now at the registrar. If you want contactless voting in person, you can do that too. So Joel, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on East County Magazine.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you and what you do. And I appreciate you putting all this information, even my other opponents out there, so people really know who's doing what in our community. And it really helps. So I appreciate you and what you
do. Yeah, we did interview one, Vicki Butcher, who reached out to us. And the other two, we couldn't find websites for. They didn't have ballot statements. So I'm not sure how serious they are. But we're really pleased that we were able to get, looks like the two, you know, serious contenders to do interviews. And listeners, if you go on our politics section on East County Magazine, you can also find interviews for a lot of the other top races going on across San Diego's East County. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producers, John Sepulveda and Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.